This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. I write about the digital signage business on my blog, 16.9. I celebrate great and intriguing work, I explore and I explain new technology, and I filter the industry BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to get beyond the press releases and trade show chatter and hear from some of the most successful, influential, and interesting people in this business. 16.9 is sponsored by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. In this episode, I'm speaking with Vincent Alcantre, who is the CEO of Intuilab. His company is based in Toulouse, France, but it makes a product called Intuiface that is marketed and used around the globe. Vincent talks about the company's roots, doing custom software development aimed at the aerospace industry, which made sense since Airbus was based around the corner. But about 5 years ago, Intuilab took a stab at disrupting how interactive touchscreen experiences are being built and sold. The result is a product that cuts out a lot of the cost and complication that's usually part of building touchscreen apps. We spoke in a hallway I was hoping would be quiet at Infocom. That only sort of worked. All right, well, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Dave.
Can you tell me what Intuiface is, or is it Intuilab or
Intuiface? That's Intuilab.
Intuilab. Intuilab, and the product is Intuiface.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Tell me what it's all about, how long you guys have been around, you know, give me the background.
So Intuilab has been founded in 2002, so it's pretty old. And at that time, we were doing custom software development, mostly focusing on user experience, user interface, and innovative user interface at that time. So
for what sector?
For the mil aero space sector.
Oh, really?
Long time
okay.
ago.
Right.
Yeah,
huh?
We are based out of Toulouse, France, which is the home of Airbus.
Ah,
so that's why we started in this area. And since the beginning, we were working on developing a specific UI, mixing voice, touches, and so on, what was called at that time multimodal UI. Mm-hmm. We started R&D in multi-touch as early as 2005, around large touch table, right? So 2 years before the iPhone, right?
Yep.
And the issue with that is that business is that we are not very scalable, right? Very local and so on.
All custom jobs?
All custom jobs. And we started to imagine a kind of product that would help us to scale and not do any custom job anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's how we came with the idea of Intuiface. And by 2011, we made a kind of pivot, right? We got some VC money, who trusted our business plan and our technology.
French money or US money?
French money.
Okay.
And we started developing Intuiface, right? And Intuiface was released late 2011 as with the promise of cutting any custom software development for UI. So we wanted to disrupt ourselves and get rid for the others of all the developers who were working on custom UI development. Right.
Which so at that point was mostly Flash, I would imagine.
At that time, that was Flash or even any, you know, C, C++,
right.
All that thing.
So very hard, skilled, custom, very lengthy, hard. Costly.
Absolutely,
work.
Absolutely. And we saw an opportunity on the market to disrupt a little bit this way of doing things by building a platform which would allow a person who is not a developer to create very interesting, very interactive UI. And that's how Intuiface was born.
And how large is the company now?
The company is now 20 people.
And mostly in Toulouse?
19 in Toulouse and one in the US.
Okay, so so a sales office here primarily, sales
yes,
biz dev.
Yes, biz dev marketing too, right? So because we wanted to, from the beginning, to be an international company, and at least looks like, and this is why we opened with Jeff, that, you know, an office in near Boston, right? And currently we have more than 1,000 active paying customers, and only 6% are in France. 50% of our customers are in the US.
Wow.
All right, so we came from a local French-based company to really a company with an international offering, with a global offering.
And is digital signage the primary vertical you're after, or are you serving a whole bunch of different interests?
We are serving quite a lot of verticals, but digital signage is the main one, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, 50% of our users are digital agencies. Mm-hmm. Who are using our product for interactive digital signage.
Right.
But what we see on the market is that the borders of, between digital signage, real app development, sophisticated presentation, like you can do with PowerPoint or with Prezi and so on, all these things, even an interactive kiosk, it's like an e-commerce website in a store, right? Mm-hmm. So all these domains are in fact joining together, right? So mm-hmm. And we don't see a lot of established frontiers between all these different business areas. They are all coming together mm-hmm. at the end of the day.
And what do end users get out of it? Do they get a file? Is it a content management system on its own, or like what all is the product that you buy?
So we'll speak about the CMS things right after. So what they purchase is an authoring tool, which mm-hmm. looks like Adobe Photoshop, for example, or Illustrator, right?
Yeah.
Where you drag and drop things and you create an app with that. The quote-unquote programming paradigm which is used with Intuiface is trigger and action. Mm-hmm. So when I'm touching this image, then I'm going to expand it,
right.
This kind of thing. So it's a very powerful paradigm. And so out of that authoring tool that we have named the Composer is saved a file, mm-hmm. a data file, JSON file, which is then interpreted by a player. It's like the Flash model,
okay.
right? And our player can run on Windows, iOS, Android, Chrome OS, and the two SoC from LG and Samsung.
Right. So it's just a file that you drop into a container and schedule it and you're done?
Yes, okay. Exactly. But that file is, at the end of the day, it's like an app, right?
So it's got its built-in player.
Exactly,
okay.
Right. And so what, in terms of CMS, we don't really provide a CMS. Our vision is that the content is already out there, right? Mm-hmm. And so what is more important is to be able to connect to any kind of API. And that's mm-hmm. what we are providing to our user. A very easy way to get the content from any source using API.
And how does that work? Have you built data connectors to a lot of systems?
Yes,
okay.
Data connector, and they are very easy to build.
Uh-huh.
And now we are working on a technology which will go and get any API, REST API, and automatically build that connector for you.
Mm-hmm. Based on a fee, like this is custom work that you guys would do?
No. We explain how to do it. Again, our philosophy to scale, so we are 20 folks, 19 in France.
Yeah.
We have put as much as we could in a knowledge-based, in self-education videos mm-hmm. and so on. So we have pretty much put everything there. And out of our revenues, only 5% mm-hmm. is coming from services. 95% okay. is pure subscription selling.
So if somebody's going to do a sophisticated project where they're going to ingest data from another system, they're probably already technically competent, and if you have a knowledge base that they can tap into, they're going to figure it out.
Yes, some okay. are, yes. And also, as I said, 50% of our customers are digital agencies, and we have built a network of what we call Intuiface experts around the world.
Okay.
So when, I would say, a less skilled customer is asking us about services, right, we prefer to point that customer to one of our experts around the world who
okay.
will take over the job.
Are these registered experts that are sort of a partner program or something?
Yeah,
or
we have a partner program with different uh-huh. rank, the gold, silver kind of
right.
thing. Yes.
So we push them off that way,
yes.
And that kind of ensures that they're going to get a good project
absolutely.
Delivered.
Absolutely. And they're showing up their work on our website, etc. Mm-hmm.
So what would be a good example of a recent project that you've done that really kind of pushes the envelope on how the product works?
tomorrow I am in Redmond visiting one of our best customer, right?
And large company that starts with M?
Yes. Okay. And they have built an interactive way of presenting the company, how to welcome newcomers in their lobby, etc., etc., that they are currently deploying across all their offices in the world. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the projects which has been built by a partner of us for that company, which is hugely successful, right? And it's a very interesting, interactive, touch-based, which have interesting accessibility feature like text-to-speech. Mm-hmm. So when you touch a text, you can get the voice, voicing that that text, etc. Mm-hmm. So it's one of them. Another great project one of our digital agency customer did in Netherlands is for a travel agency. So they've built an interactive way of presenting that travel agency offering, right? Mm-hmm. And it has been deployed across 250 kiosks in the Netherlands.
Does the product support language packs? So you can do something in Dutch, you can do something in Mandarin or Cantonese?
You can do you know, all the text and so on that we're supporting. We're supporting around 35 different languages. Mm-hmm. We provide a touch keyboard which support all these languages, so absolutely,
Do you provide templates, or are they kind of wizards, or how does that all work?
So that's a good question.
Thank you.
No, because from where the digital signature world is coming, right? So there is always a template to be offered, right?
Yeah.
And most of the offering on the market are about parameterizing these templates. Mm-hmm. While we do quite the opposite, you can build anything from scratch, but we are providing also templates to our customers, presentation or e-commerce, mm-hmm. and this kind of template.
So is it more of a wireframe that you provide
exactly.
to artwork?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
That's wireframe our customer can start with.
Okay. Because you know, one of the concerns always with templates is everything starts to look the same. And it's designed in a vanilla way where it's not terribly visually appealing.
Absolutely. That's also a good point. So when you go on our website and watch all the videos of the interactive experiences that our customers have done, right, you don't find any common theme between all these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
They all look different.
Yeah.
And that's key for our customers.
Mm-hmm. What have you guys learned about developing interactive experiences and seen from your customer base in terms of what works and what doesn't? Because I've seen all kinds of interactive touch experiences that just have this big button that says touch here to start or touch here to begin or whatever, and I don't know why anybody would. What are those kind of key points that you guys reinforce that this is the way you need to do this to get people attracted and make sure they understand how to use it?
So we provide a lot of guidelines in our knowledge base how to design a touch application. First, what we still notice is that even if we provide the multi-touch capabilities, 90% of the experience built by our customers are single touch, right?
Okay.
So there is still a step. We also provide a way to do gesture, right? Swipe and these kind of things. But so far, the ultimate touch is about zooming in and zooming out in a map. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we also provide samples available on our website, free samples, to help our customer be more creative about multi-touch. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we provide specific what we call design accelerator, like when you need to show where to touch, like the example you mentioned. We provide, for example, an animated hand with a fingers, so that a customer, a user, can just drag and drop and put near the button to really show. So we provide this kind of help for the customer to really design a touch application which makes sense.
There's a bunch of costs involved in putting this podcast together, so I'm very grateful for the support this podcast will get from our new and sole sponsor, ScreenFeed. Here's founder and CEO, Jeremy Gavin.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. As content people, we love great content, and we think Dave's doing a great job with this 69 podcast, which is why we've offered to sponsor it. If you'd like to see the content that we create on a daily basis, head over to screenfeed.com and check it out. Let us know if we can help you in any project you're working on. And do me a favor, if you don't find what you're looking for, shoot me an email at jeremy@screenfeed.com. I'm always interested in new ways we can help. Now back to the podcast.
Is it safer and a better practice to go with single touch as opposed to multi-touch because you're introducing more complication and the opportunity for the touch application to get confused and lock up?
Well, it depends on the goal of your application. Mm. If you are in a very public place, right, yep. You want, it's all a matter of learning curve for the user, right? And so if the visitor has 5 seconds to understand how the application is working, you will have a very constrained workflow.
Yeah.
One big push button, then right. Another one, you know, like at the airport, right?
Yeah, step, and I'm done.
Exactly.
Done.
But we have also some customers who are building apps for a more professional environment.
Where, like a museum, you know,
exactly,
or a learning center for a company.
Yeah, where the visitor is spending or is supposed to spend more time,
right.
You know, on the kiosk, on the experience, on the big wall. And so now you can be more creative about which kind of integration you can offer because the visitor has the time to learn. He has mm-hmm. one minute, 90 seconds, 2 minutes, these kind of things, mm-hmm. right? And in a more professional environment, where you are going to focus on, for example, on productivity, then you can invent new way of interacting, mm-hmm. which are not very obvious at the beginning, but when mm-hmm. you have learned them, then you can do your task mm-hmm. in a much more efficient way. So there is a whole continuum between airport-like to a really professional productivity-oriented apps.
Okay. You mentioned earlier Chromeboxes, system-on-chip displays, that sort of thing. Those don't have the power of an i7 PC or something like that. Or if you decide to use your product on something like a smart sign panel, are you constrained at all in terms of what you can do? Are there limitations?
So basically we have two players, one for Windows, which is built in .NET technology, mm-hmm. and another player for the rest of the platform, so which okay. is based on HTML5, right?
Is it a light player or?
It's that HTML5 player is supporting around 90% of the feature of the okay. Windows player. So it's not that much of a downgrade, right? Mm-hmm. And we've made a lot of progress with HTML5. HTML5 has made a lot of progress in itself, right? Mm-hmm. And the support from the big guys is getting pretty good. On Chrome OS, it's a wonderfully responsive, and LG and Samsung are catching up. So we are also expecting the new product line from Samsung now, which should
the
be
ties in ones.
Yes, which should be a little, you know, more powerful mm-hmm. for our needs. Mm-hmm. than the previous generation.
And why is that? Is just the way the software is optimized, or are they more powerful displays?
Basically for us, it's which kind of browser technologies these guys have put on the platform. Mm-hmm. And basically they used to be late, like around 2 years late compared to the latest, you know, Chrome OS
right.
bits,
yeah.
And that was an issue. It was more a question of browser HTML5 compliance mm-hmm. than anything else.
Is there a difference between European user base, the customer base, and the North American customer base in terms of what they're doing and how they want to operate with you?
Well, I have a U.S. business background. I spent 6 years in the U.S. Mm-hmm. during my professional life, so I'm used to the U.S. way of doing business, even the U.S. habits there. And in fact, I find doing business like in France or in some countries in Europe, in Germany, much more difficult than in the U.S. Hmm. And in terms of advance, well, I would say that now, 5 years ago, we would say that Europe was a little bit ahead, at least in interactive technologies. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the case anymore. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So why is it more difficult in Europe? I've got to follow that up.
yeah, because it's a matter of doing business. The way we do business, we provide everything on our website, so people are coming in, are visiting our website, they can download the free version, so we have a freemium model, mm-hmm. and go through all the self-education material, and then when they are happy, they just you know, purchase with a credit card.
Right.
For example, in Europe, people have, continental Europe, have are less inclined to purchase with a credit card. So you always need to go into a transaction and discuss pricing and so on and so on. While with the US and Canada, it's more, much more straightforward
way
of doing business.
You work with a lot of these partner companies. If there are technical issues with the interactive experience that's being developed, who supports it? Is it your partner ecosystem, or do they get support straight from your company?
The client for these customers are, you know, supported by our customers, right? And so they act as a level one, sometimes level two kind of support. And we do the level three. But 50% of our customers are just, you know, regular enterprise. And so we do all the support from Toulouse through email. So we have extended business hours for our support people, and it's working great, right? So, and we have already, like, so 5 years, for 5 years under our belt, so the product is running very well now. There are no major fires or crises anymore. So, yeah.
Anymore.
We are done with that, yes, I think so.
You mentioned disruption at the front, and disrupting your own company. I would imagine that there are digital signage CMS platforms that have invested a lot of resources into their content designers, including interactive capabilities. And I would assume that really just seriously disrupts the value proposition of some of those companies. You know, why do I need to buy this whole rich suite? I can have a much lighter software player if all I'm going to do is drop an Intuiface application on it.
That's absolutely correct. Well, our first competitor is the not invented here, you know, custom dev development. You know, and when you look at our digital agency customers, they are all small or medium size. We don't have the large one. Why? Because most of them have plenty of in-house developers, right? And they have their processes, their creative processes put in place. They don't want to disrupt that. So a designer is doing design and the developer is developing. Thanks to our product, smaller players can now achieve the same level of quality with a much lower price of what this much larger company do with all their developers,
right?
And regarding the, I would say, the more traditional digital signage competitors, well, it's a big step from doing a kind of CMS authoring tool where you quote-unquote, you know, put this video stream there, this image there, and that's it, compared to what we are doing, which is more like an IDE, but for non-developer. Like you're really going to build an app by doing drag and drop, expressing triggers and actions, getting an API and these kind of things. Well, at least that has cost us a lot in terms of development. And I don't see right now in the digital signage ecosystem companies which would be willing to invest that much in this kind of technology. Either because they don't have the money, or if they have it, they prefer to spend it in marketing and salespeople.
Right. And they're also being heavily driven by whatever the customer wants, so that's where their development goes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So,
but we are working with a few of these digital signage companies, like with Signage Life, for example, right?
Yeah.
Which has a very open, you know, vision of the market.
Yeah. And Jason has done very well by bolting on other services and rather than building.
Yeah, so
himself.
He has disrupted himself. Plenty of other, you know, old-minded players. And so we are going well together, and we know when not to fight together for a budget, how to share a budget, which is very important. So, and at the end of the day, that's how I think we can be successful, and why Jason is successful too.
We've talked about cost, and I'm curious. We're sitting in the hallway of Infocom here, so there's groups walking by. They're quite loud, so I'll just blabber on here for a second before they go. We've talked about cost. I'm curious, if you were an end user and you had a custom project developed by an interactive agency of some kind and they were not using your tool set, what might it cost versus if they used your tool set? What's the, like, what's the difference?
So the studies we have made with some of our customers is we have a difference of price from one to five.
Okay.
from 1 to 5 at least, right? And when our digital agencies customers are using our product, we have also computed that our license cost is only like 5 to 6% of the total value they resell to their customers, knowing that they are already 5 times cheaper than if that client, the end client, would have asked, you know, a system integrator, software integrator, to build that app from scratch. Mm-hmm. And the time to have that app ready is also tremendously shorter than with the regular design and then code and waterfall model.
So faster, cheaper, and easier.
Yeah, absolutely.
And great margins if you're reselling it.
Absolutely, yes, yes, great margin for that, yeah.
So what does it cost, and how do you buy it if you're an end user?
So you purchase the authoring tool, and so we have 2 tiers. One is a pro version for around a little bit less than $500 or euro. We have the enterprise version, which is a little bit more powerful, especially regarding integration with APIs or deployment, which you purchase for $1,000 or euro per year, right? And then you purchase players, right? You purchase 1 player per device. That's a regular digital signage model.
Okay.
And it starts for Windows at €240 per year, which is like
20 a month.
That's not that much. Down to euro or $2 per month and per Android or iPad tablet.
Okay.
Right.
Because it's a lighter...
Yes, it's a lighter version, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And typically you're not scaling out to thousands of locations with this, so the numbers don't really run up.
No, because, you know, deployment of thousands of touch screens are still pretty rare out there, right?
Yeah.
I don't know any of them, right, except all this and all the POS, for example, which at the end of the day are also... touchscreens, right? Public, put in a public place. But our largest deployment through some of our digital agency customers are in the size of around 300-400.
Privately held company?
Yes.
Profitable?
Now, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
After you got through all the humps and
in building that product and going also for a subscription model, right? So from the start, we decided not to go for the perpetual licensing model, which we could have done, and so these two combined made the fact that we needed some VC monies and trustful VCs, and for the last 6 months we have been break even, and now we start to reap the benefit of our subscription business model.
You turn the corner.
Yes, exactly.
So what's ahead for you guys, and what do you see for the next year, year and a half?
We have 4 major releases per year, right? So that's the beauty for the customer of the subscription business. You know, you need to have suppliers who are cranking really good stuff very often, so you are willing to continue subscribing, right? And so recently we released some very interesting beacon feature. Right, and especially so we are complying with iBeacon, but also with Eddystone beacon. And one cool thing with Eddystone is that an interactive application can broadcast a URL. And if you are on iOS, if you have Chrome installed, you can get right away the URL. You don't need an app, specific app to be installed, and which has been the, you know, the roadblock for
iBeacon. Yeah, so now it's right on the device layer.
Yes, exactly. Or we have Android, it's built in. So we can see that as a replacement of a QR code, right? So instead of printing or visualizing a QR code, you use a Eddystone URL for that. And so usually we provide features which are getting mainstream like 2 years after we have publicly provided them. So same with analytics, right? We provide a great feature about analytics where designers can monitor, clients can monitor what has been touched and so on. And our next big things will be around APIs. There are APIs to access content everywhere, you know, open data. And it has been very frustrating for non-developers, for creative people, because they don't have the skill to access all this data, right? So they need to learn development, and that's painful. And so we are going to automatize that and make the consumption of API, any kind of API, way more easier, right?
Okay.
And so that is going to be a big thing for us this year for our
So if you're working with a point of sale company, for an example, you would be able to have some sort of an API wizard that would be able to ingest the ordering system data
Absolutely.
And build like a touchscreen at a fast food
inventory,
outlet.
Current offering, menu, all these things. This is going to be very, very easy with our offering sometime this year. Absolutely.
And that, again, has the potential to be very, very disruptive because I would assume companies that do that sort of work now charge one hell of a lot of money.
When you can see even the business model of current digital signage company, I mean, the most established older one, right? So so what is the share of professional service in their revenue?
Yeah.
So it's like 50 going 60 if you add to the maintenance revenue. Mm-hmm. So what are the new revenues coming in, right? So, yeah, we are on our way to disrupt that. We want our customers to be freed from all these huge fees so that kind of interactive technology can spread much more than currently it is.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. You're welcome.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. 16.9 the blog and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.